Might hand some, pass out some hand sanitizer after service today. All right. Today's scripture reading is a triplet of Proverbs, starting with Proverbs chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Happy are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding, for her income is better than silver and her revenue better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. The second scripture is from Proverbs chapter 4, verses 5 through 9. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom, and whatever else you get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a fair garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown. And lastly, from Proverbs 8, verses 27 through 31. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master worker, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and delighting in the human race.
Since I am not on vacation, I have the privilege and the honor to introduce you to my friend. As I thought about it, I tried to recall the first time I met Reverend Barbara Greer, and what I came up with was actually at a Fairview Theology on Tap when our mutual friend, the Reverend Dr. Stan Smith, invited her to join us. So I thought that was pretty funny that I actually met her at a Fairview event and began our friendship some decade ago. And one of the things I love most about Barb is her adventurous spirit and her willingness to say yes to life. I know that she has a varied history in the church, a tradition of being a strong woman. You'll note that she was ordained in 1975 in the Disciples of Christ region here in the Pacific Southwest. One of the things that was most unique about her was that while she wasn't the first woman ordained ever, she was the first woman ordained who served a church. Is that right? So, in fact, you'll remember that the United Church of Christ, in fact, ordained a woman in 1853 with Antoinette Brown, but she was never able to actually serve a church. So they put women in the Sunday school realm or maybe to pray afterwards, but not to stand at the pulpit and lead a congregation. So what Reverend Barb did was really unique in 1975 in this disciples region to take the helm of a church. So I'm honored to have her here by her history and her presence and her strength, but it's also fun to know a friend of mine who I enjoy every moment I spend with her, and I mostly enjoy seeing the adventures that she says yes to. She, as you see in her bio here, she travels as much as possible, and I want to sit at her feet, a fellow traveler, and hear story after story of the places she's been. So after the service, you might ask her where she's visited. And those of you who are also travelers, in Espanol we say patas del perro. We have feet of the dog. We want to see the world. And so those of you who also have patas del perro, you can talk with Rev Barb and find out where she's been. So it's a joy for me to welcome her today. I know that she cares much about this topic of women in ministry and women in the Bible and the feminine spirit of God. So I'm interested and eager and awaiting, like all of you, to hear the words that she has to share with us today. My friend.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for your warm welcome. And I apologize, but I've got it. I've got the cold that's going around, and I'm feeling much better today. So I know you don't know me, but I know a little bit about you because I spy on what comes up in Facebook, what Sarah posts, and I have to tell you, I really do admire the ministry of this congregation, how you seek to promote justice in the world, how you reach out to so many people, how you embrace our lives right here in Costa Mesa, in Orange County, and across the world. So I really do appreciate the good news that you embody and that you share with so many others. Well, the reason that Sarah invited me today was because of a conversation I initiated with her a few months ago. I had been asked to speak to a group of women about my journey into ministry. This group wanted an update on how women clergy are doing in what was then 2018. So I started doing a little bit of research, and my research wasn't impressing me. So I called Sarah, and I said, Sarah, how are things going with women in the United Church of Christ? I'm Disciples of Christ. And she, as you can imagine, Sarah had lots of great stories, and she had some knowledge about that. And needless to say, things aren't going as well in the United Church of Christ or the American Baptist Church as well as we might have expected in 2018 and now 2019. You see, I had made a false assumption. I'm prone to make false assumptions. But based on my ministry, when I left seminary, and I actually left in 1976, that was 43 years ago, and I'm thinking, what? 43 years? Where did that go? When I left seminary in 1976, one quarter of the seminary student body was women. So I just assumed that things were growing and getting better, but not so much. What my little brief foray into statistics showed was that in the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, there are only 3 women in the United States serving congregations with a worshiping number of 250 on a Sunday morning. Only 3. Only very few, and I don't remember the number on this, were serving congregations as senior pastors with multiple staff, with full-time staff, and they were the senior minister or the co-minister. And only a third of all of our congregations have as a pastoral leader a woman. And in talking to Sarah and in talking to our executive director, this seems to be not just a fact in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, but in so many denominations. So I interviewed the executive minister of clergy for the Disciples, and he said quite wisely, the church reflects the culture. The church reflects the culture. And the church is still catching up with the history of sexism, especially in regard to pastoral leadership. But then he went on to say, to make matters worse, women clergy face an ongoing antagonism by male clergy. And that just kind of blew my mind, because male clergy haven't learned how to deal with their own sexism. Well, Warren told me about a video, and Sarah told me about a video that the Lutheran Church has put together about what women are facing from especially male colleagues, or from men in particular. So we're going to watch this brief minute. It's only about 5 minutes, right, Sarah? Yeah, it's pretty short. We're going to watch this little video right now, and then we'll go on from there. Thank you.
are the first woman preacher I've ever met. Are they all as good looking as you?
Are they all as good looking as you? As good looking. That must be the criteria.
Are they all as good looking as you? Oh, man.
Come here, Pastor. I just need a little kiss for comfort.
I just need a little kiss for comfort. Whoa.
Yeah.
I just need a little kiss for comfort. Wow.
I have never met a female pastor before. What do I call you? Pastorette?
What do I call you? Pastorette? These are serious?
Yes.
That outfit looks really nice. We must be paying you too much.
We must be paying you too much. Why would this ever come out of anyone's mouth?
You're like a little girl playing pastor up there.
You're like a little girl playing pastor up there.
How's that at all appropriate? You don't look like a senior pastor.
What's that supposed to look like?
You are perfect for us, except for the problem that you are a woman.
You are perfect for us. Except for the problem that you are a woman.
I've heard that before, but the other way around, when somebody said, "We're so glad that you're a man." And I said, "Me too, but I don't know what that means." But I did know what it meant.
We really like you and think you're a great pastor, but you can't be the senior pastor because you're female.
And that's why not?
We called you because we knew we could afford you. Women pastors are cheaper.
This is awkward. I don't know what kind of reaction I need to be giving or whatever, but I do know, but I don't know. This is terrible.
You shouldn't negotiate your salary and ask for more money. You should just be grateful you are getting a call at all as a female.
You should just be grateful you're getting a call at all as a female.
So when are you going to have a baby?
So, when are you going to have a baby?
What are you going to do Sunday morning if your child gets sick?
My goodness.
Yeah.
What are you going to do Sunday morning if your child gets sick?
Cat. Sleep.
Take care of your kid. Sorry. It's just what it is. Sorry.
Take care of the child.
Hey, you're looking good. Hey, you are looking... No! You're looking good. Yeah.
Yuck.
Your belly is finally sticking out farther than your boobs do.
Your belly is finally sticking out farther than your boobs do. Seriously?
I heard you said you could be bishop one day. Don't you think that's going a little too far?
Sue Briner, no it's not.
I'm sorry, guys. Like, that is bull. That really sucks. That's uncomfortable.
Golly. I mean, it's like I got through, what, 10? And I was like, are we done yet? I mean, it felt like I had done 20 after 10. Each one was...
We have just over 100 women on the roster.
Of our 20 largest congregations, only one is led by a woman.
Of the top 50 earners on the roster, 6 are women.
Of the bottom 100 earners on the roster, 75 are women.
I won't ever be able intimately to understand the uphill struggle of my sisters and colleagues in pastoral ministry. I so admire and respect their courage and faith and tenacity to keep saying yes to God's call in pastoral ministry. And so it becomes my personal conviction to do my part to honor and support, empower, and make way for women in leadership and in pastoral ministry. Because we can't be the whole church for the sake of the gospel, without the presence, the gifts, and the leadership of both men and women.
That was a mouthful, right? Rather shocking. So after watching something like this, you may be wondering how Pastor Sarah and so many other women find the resiliency and the courage and the hopefulness to make the journey into ministry, to be attentive to the call of wisdom while experiencing these type of things. So I'm going to share a little bit about my story. The year was 1970. Now, those of you, I think there's a few of you old enough to remember 1970. There weren't many women in the public eye. I mean, when I went back to think about it, women were not in traditional male roles. We didn't really have many political leaders, a few, but not many, especially in the United States. I happened to have had a female pediatrician growing up, but I didn't have a female pediatrician as an adult. We weren't hearing much about women doing much in science, although we found out that women were doing things in science, but men were taking their credit for it. We weren't hearing much about women religious leaders. In fact, in Los Angeles, if those of you who are from this area, you might remember that we had one TV weather person, Kelly Lang. Do you remember her, Kelly Lang? She was great. And then Connie Chung came along on CBS. So those were like our first real visual images of women in the public eye doing a professional role. Well, it was 1970, and some of us were hearing voices crying in the wilderness. Women's voices. These women were seeking to redefine roles and responsibilities that went beyond gender identification. The year was 1970, and I was a religious studies student at Chapman College, and it was a college then. There were 1,200 of us. I had entered into the religious studies department because I felt the church should be leading the movement against the Vietnam War. I mean, I was out on the street, you know, protesting, trying to educate people, and I thought, why isn't the church doing this? I was raised in the church. I was active in the African American movement at my college. I thought, well, why isn't the church leading out and speaking on racism and what needs to be happening? So I was in the religious studies program hoping to find a way that the church could speak to the justice concerns of our day and the peace concerns of our day. In 1970, we hadn't finished with Vietnam. I don't know that we'll ever finish with that. The black movement was in full force and scaring everyone, if you'll remember that, in 1970. Cesar Chavez was raising our consciousness in the migrant fields out here in California. And besides all of that, I was raised as a little girl singing, "Jesus Loves Me." And I knew there was something much deeper than a sentimental song about that promise in my life. So it wasn't long after I arrived at Chapman College that my religious studies professors were sending me to be recruited by seminaries. And I went, what? Seminary? Doesn't that mean a call to ministry? But of course I went where I was told to go, and I was being recruited, and I was shocked because I really didn't know that women could be ministers. And my boyfriend at the time said, who was a disciple, PK, said, well, you would probably do children's education. And I thought, well, I just don't know about that, you know. But I still went and was recruited. Interestingly enough, one of my professors at Chapman College gave me a full scholarship to attend seminary. I mean, he saw something that I certainly didn't see in myself. So I began at the School of Theology at Claremont. When I enrolled, I think it was 1971 when I enrolled, or 72, 71, there were only 10 women at the School of Theology at Claremont. 10 women. And sadly enough, I was the only one that finished. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. I just want you to know how difficult it was. It was extremely difficult. But I was really excited. I was so excited to figure out a way that the church could be doing what I felt the scriptures were telling me it should do. So there was a class being offered in the Minor Prophets. And you know the Minor Prophets. One of them said, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? Wow. I couldn't wait to get into a class where I would be seeped into this liberating consciousness. I couldn't wait to see how a young woman, I was only about 22 or 23 at the time, like me, could find a place in naming who God is in my life. I couldn't wait to see how women could fully embody who God is in the real incarnate sense of that understanding. And I was really excited to figure out how common people could speak truth to power. Truth to power. So I showed up for class, and I arrived early, of course, because I was an A student, and I sat in the front row, don't we all? And in came our professor, the famous Dr. K. Happened to be the tallest professor on campus, happened to have the most commanding presence. And he took his place in front of the classroom, and he scanned all of us, and he started out, gentlemen. And I was just going, am I invisible? I thought. And I just thought, okay, just get over it. And I went into my little codependency thing that most women have. It just really probably doesn't matter. Well, he went on. Gentlemen, welcome to the study of the Minor Prophets. You are about to meet the men who define the fatherhood of God. Because of these men, the fatherhood of God will be embraced by the brotherhood of man. Gentlemen, there are no other men more important in the Bible than these. Well, I was pretty stunned. I thought, where the hell am I? This was supposed to be the leading liberal theological school on the West Coast. Was this an inclusive place? I hadn't heard anybody, any other professor talk like this. I was stunned. I was rather shaken. I left class shaking my head, and I know that I talked to my friends about it. I don't think I talked to any of my mentors, which probably would have been a good idea, but I didn't. I just thought about it and struggled. And then I thought, well, I'll just open up a dialogue in our theology newsletter and see what happens. That was really a dumb thing to do because even though I didn't name the professor or the class, I did ask the question about inclusivity. I pondered how we experience the embodiment of God if our language doesn't mean something to us. So the next week I went back to my class, and of course I arrived early and I sat in the front seat, and I was eager to learn about these minor prophets, despite my professor's language. Well, when the professor took his place in front of the classroom, he didn't start with the word gentleman. He started with my name. He towered over me with the paper, the seminary paper newsletter in his hand, shaking it, becoming so passionate in his abuse that spittle sprayed from his mouth. And after whatever he said, which was so horrible, he ended up by asking me to leave the classroom. Well, as shaken as I was, you better believe I didn't move. I wasn't going to move. I mean, first of all, I had never had anybody speak to me in that way before. I was shocked, but I wasn't going to leave. I had a right to be right there. But something happened inside me. Something brand new, something unexpected, something I don't know where it came from. But I heard these words whispered in my ear. What does the Lord require of you but to love justice, to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with your God? After that faithful day in class, I didn't mention this experience to anyone except probably my closest friends, but one day, 3 years later, like my last semester, my champion, the dean of the theology school, the one who taught classes like the church as a moral problem, a man with a keen social justice consciousness, came up to me with this painful expression on his face, and he said, "Barbara, I just heard what Dr. K did to you in class. And I'm thinking, well, that was 3 years ago. But he said, "Why didn't you come to me?" And you know, I couldn't answer him. How could I explain what it felt like to be invisible? Can you explain that? To feel so powerless in the face of abuse. To wonder what it meant to be female in a male-imagined theology. What did it mean to be a still small voice, a very small voice, speaking truth to power? I didn't know how to answer him. Oddly enough, to me, my professors were mentoring me into this weird thing called ordained ministry. They would say things to me like, "We know you don't know it, but you are a minister. Don't give up. Keep moving forward." And so I did. I would finish a class, I became a seminary intern in a church, I volunteered for our regional church ministry committees, what you would call your conference committees, and finally I began the ordination process. And it was at times like that video that we just saw, just like that, where people would say the darndest things. Pretty awful things. During my ordination interviews, one of the clergymen told me that it was unfair for me, I was married by that time, to be a married clergywoman because surely when my husband got a job, I would have to abandon the congregation. Really? One family member, my aunt, who was known to say suspect things, told me that if I was a candidate for a ministerial position and a man with a family was applying, I should take my name out of the hat. Now this one, you'll love this one. One congregant told me, I must be the spawn of the devil because God wouldn't ordain a woman to ministry. That was a very interesting experience. That would be good for a video. Another congregant wanted to see my marriage license because my first husband and I didn't have the same last names. And in every town I went to, I was given the test of faith. It's something that evangelical fundamentalist ministers like to do to someone like me to find out if I was Christian enough. Interesting. And believe it or not, as sarcastic and as I am today, because I'm old and I'm retired, I was really polite. I was really polite in the face of all of this because I was so worried, I was so concerned about the woman, clergywoman, who might come after me. And I didn't want her to have to face whatever anger I might have wanted to express. I wanted it to be easier for the next person. Well, several years after my classroom experience with Dr. K, Dr. K came to my house for dinner. Now, this is an interesting story. I was a campus pastor in a small town in Washington State, and there was going to be a seminar where Dr. K and Dr. B, both Old Testament professors, were going to come and do a seminar, and it was on environment, the environment, and the biblical roots of that. Well, Dr. B happened to be my husband's dissertation professor. So, of course, we had to have Dr. B over. We had been to his house many times, so you can't ask Dr. B without asking Dr. K. So Dr. K was coming to dinner. I was pretty nervous. So my husband and I decided that we would serve some foods that might appeal to each man's upbringing. And it happened that Dr. K was from Germany. So I chose pickled herring and Gewürztraminer wine. Well, they came into the house, and of course I had the pickled herring out. That was an hors d'oeuvre. And when Dr. K saw the pickled herring, he went, pickled herring! Never in America for 40 years has anyone served me pickled herring! He was in ecstasy. He was just beaming, so, you know, so far so good. So then I pulled out the wine, the Gewürztraminer, and he goes, Gewürztraminer, the best wine from the old country. And of course he knew which region it was from, and he was practically in tears. And he then went on to teach us how to appreciate the bouquet, how to taste the wine and even gargle it a little bit. It was quite a show. We had a great time. Is it too much of a stretch to say that Jesus turned some pickled herring and some good Gewürztraminer wine into a sacred meal? Is it too much to say that? I don't think so. Needless to say, the evening was a success, and so when we walked them out to their car, Dr. K took me by the hand, and he said, I remember that I was very unkind to you when you were a young seminarian. I hope that you will forgive me. And as they pulled away from the house, I heard whispered in my ears, do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. Can we have a prayer? Loving one, how do we wait for wisdom? How do we wait when it's so hard at times. We sit in your presence, I hope, waiting for the still small voice, the promise, that you are making a way where there is no way. In each moment, let us seek out your word of wisdom. Let us use our eyes to see your light and your color. Let us use our ears to hear your music in the song of birds or in the sound of thunder and rain. And with our mouths, let us taste your goodness. May we be the perfection of your joy. Amen.